Good morning. It's always good to be with you, brethren and sisters. My jokes will get progressively worse as this goes on. So, water is a prevalent theme in the Bible, as most of you know. In the Scriptures, we read a lot about water. And the primary reason for that is because of the lack of it in early Israel. Water was something that was definitely needed. And as we go through the scriptures this morning, we come across sometimes where it talks about wells and sometimes where it talks about cisterns. And before we kind of get in there, we just kind of want to talk about the difference, because sometimes they're kind of used interchangeably, although technically there is kind of a difference in those. So I tried to make a drawing here, and this is land here, and there's kind of a valley that comes down in here. And I used this in a talk one time before. Anybody know what this is? H2O. Right? I asked for the formula of water on a test, chemistry test one time, and some student wrote that. So I gave him 1 point extra credit. So they got 1 out of 100 on the test. That was really good. So this is kind of a water table here. And sometimes why you go down into a valley and there's a river down in here, because the water comes right across there. And what we can do is we can dig a well, hopefully a really good well that actually taps into this water table. So we dig down far enough here so there's flowing water down and they're a complete continuous source. We've tapped into the water source. This is really good. Or we could be up here somewhere a long ways away from the river, and we can dig a hole in the ground. And we would call that a cistern. A cistern is really anything that would collect water, hopefully hold water. The problem is with this is that it's not tapped into the source. There's not a flowing source through there. And that causes a whole bunch of problems. Really what we have to do here is we have to wait for it to rain. And hopefully we can collect a whole bunch of water. Hopefully we're not living during the time of Elijah, when Elijah doesn't let it rain for several years. And so we have to kind of wait around and collect water. And we have to kind of find our own source of water, dig our own type of hole in the ground, whereas here the water is freely provided and a continuous source. And so as we go through, we're going to go through we're going to start in Genesis and kind of go through the Bible and talk about where it mentions wells and cisterns. And we'll find as we read through there that they were extremely important. Wells were landmarks. You know, we talk about giving directions somewhere. Well, they would say, you know, you go north after you come to this well. They're very important places. They were named like their children. Like you name your children, they would name their wells different names. And many times they were the subject of contention and arguments, because access to fresh water in Israel meant life and prosperity. Water was life, and you needed to have access to it. So if we'll start in Genesis chapter 21, verses 25 through 31. We're going to talk about the three wandering Jews as we start off. We have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and all of them had wells and dug wells and had sometimes problems with their wells. And in Genesis 21, 25 through 31, we read about Abraham. It says, "Then Abraham complained to Abimelech about a well of water that Abimelech's servants had seized. But Abimelech said, 'I don't know who has done this. You did not tell me, and I heard about it only today.' So Abraham brought sheep and cattle and gave them to Abimelech, and the two men made a treaty. Abraham set apart 7 ewe lambs from the flock, and Abimelech asked Abraham, 'What is the meaning of these 7 ewe lambs you have set apart by themselves?' He replied, 'Accept these 7 ewe lambs from my hand as a witness that I dug this well.' So that place was called Beersheba, because the two men swore an oath there." We hear a lot about Beersheba in the Bible, and it's because of this well that Abraham had dug there. Very important well, and there was some contention on whose well that was. Genesis chapter 26, 17 through 22, we move on to Isaac. So Isaac moved away from there and encamped in the valley of Gerar and settled there. Isaac reopened the wells that had been dug in the time of his father Abraham, which the Philistines had stopped up after Abraham died, and he gave them the same names his father had given them. Isaac's servants dug in the valley and discovered a well of fresh water there. But the herdsmen of Gerar quarreled with Isaac's herdsmen and said, "The water is ours." So he named the well Esek because they disputed with him. Then they dug another well, but they quarreled over that one also. So he named it Sitnah. He moved on from there and dug another well, and no one quarreled over it. He named it Rehoboth, saying, "Now the Lord has given us room, and we will flourish in the land." Isaac had a lot of problems with wells. He kind of had to keep doing it and keep moving on because people would try to take theirs, not dig their own, take his. And we see that after Abraham died, the Philistines came in and tried to plug up the well, tried to cut him off from the access of the free water that was given. And Isaac reopened those. And then, I'm not going to go there, but if you remember, Jacob built several wells, but one was really significant because it was still even working and around in the time of Jesus. And in John chapter 4, if you remember that story, Jesus goes to that well and he meets a woman there, right? The Samaritan woman. And we have a story there, and that was Jacob's well where he asked her to get water for him. So Jacob also had a well that lasted a long time. We'll talk more about that well a little bit later. After Jacob, who do we have? Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, then who? We had a whole bunch of people, don't we? We have 12 of them, right? And one of them is, we kind of continue the story through one of them, and who is that? We're doing this on Wednesday night. Who is that? Joseph, right? Okay. So we've had three wells. We've had Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in their wells. And the first time we come to Joseph, and we have kind of a bad story, right? We had Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. They were good. And then we have kind of a really sad story at the beginning and the end. It's a really happy ending, but it's a sad story on how brothers treat each other sometimes, right? And, so we have the first mention of, they don't call it a well. It's called a cistern. You remember the story about the cistern with Joseph? Sometimes it's called a pit in different versions, but if you read the NIV, it's called a cistern. The brothers threw him in it, didn't they? They threw him into this cistern. In Genesis 37, 23 through 26, "So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe he was wearing, and they took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it." And I think that's significant, because most of the cisterns we come into contact with are empty. They're worthless. If we're not tapped into the free water, they're usually worthless. They don't hold a lot of water in a dry and arid region. They're empty, and they don't provide satisfaction. In fact, all they do is provide opportunities for evil. This is the first thing we have. Here's a big empty hole. We'll throw our brother, into this hole. And this is the first mention we have of a cistern, at least as far as I could find in the Bible, and it was used for evil. There's three problems, really, that I can list that we have with cisterns. The first one is, and I'll try to list them up here somewhere, that the water in them, if there is water, is Laodicean. Anybody know what that means? It's actually a word now, Laodicean water. Anybody know what that means? What does that mean? It means lukewarm, right? I was very excited that this year, I don't know if you guys watched the National Science or Spelling Bee. You ever watch that? I like to watch that because those kids are kind of nerdy and I'm kind of nerdy. And I really enjoy watching it because I can't spell hardly anything that they have. I can't even pronounce. But the championship word, the very word that won it for the girl, was Laodicean. I thought, I actually even know what the word is, and I can spell it too. And she spelled it correctly, and she won. And Laodicean means putrid, lukewarm, not palatable at all to the taste. And remember from the Church of Laodicea in Revelation, this is where this comes from. He says, "I'd rather you be hot or cold. Either one is acceptable. We make drinks, beverages out of either hot or cold, don't we? Cold water, very refreshing. Hot water, we have hot cocoa and hot tea, soup. Okay, both of these are useful. But lukewarm is worthless, and it's not satisfying at all. And this is the kind of water you would get in a cistern. It's not a free moving, it's a stagnant type of a water that is just lukewarm to the taste and not appealing, not satisfying at all. The other problem is contamination. Contamination. Because if you have something that falls into this well, some rat that falls into the well and dies and drowns if there's water in there, and if there's not, the rat will just starve. So we're going to have this rat in here. And what's going to take that away? What's going to take that away? Is anything going to wash that away? No. This is a sealed off thing here. There's no water that's going to come and going to take that away. It's going to ruin everything that's in there. If there is any water in there, it's going to ruin it all. It's going to be contaminated. Nothing's going to wash it away. We moved into a new high school this year. I got a brand new, really nice room. And as we were moving out of the old one, I was in charge of moving all of our chemicals that we were going to take over to our new storage room. And a lot of the chemicals we have are really old. So I kind of just got permission. I said, I pretty much want to get rid of all of it and just, you know, buy new stuff if we can do that, because we're supposed to have money left over to do that. And so I did. I got rid of a lot of it. And some of people in here might be bothered to know how I got rid of it, but the way you get rid of it, and this, I mean, it's right there, and we have catalogs that tell you exactly how much. If I'm going to, I threw it down the drain. That's what I did. I threw it down the drain. And that's what you're supposed to do with most of it. We have rules and laws on what you're supposed to do, and if I throw this many grams of a certain chemical down the drain, then I need to actually put then an appropriate amount of water, and it gives me that amount of water. For every amount of grams I put down there, I'm supposed to put 2 gallons of water down there. Well, I threw a lot of chemicals down the drain, and I just turned the water on and let it run all night long. I just kept flushing it down through because I needed about that much water to get it to go. They probably didn't even need to break down the school. Probably if they just waited long enough, the school would have dissolved and it would have just fallen down on its own. But I threw it all down there, and I could do that as long as I put enough water with it. Dilution is the solution to pollution. This is our chemistry phrase. Dilution is the solution to pollution. Enough water will dissolve and wash things away. In chemistry, we call water the universal solvent. The solvent is things that dissolves things. We call it the universal solvent. I always like that when I say that to my students. It's the universal solvent, because in my mind I'm thinking, and boy, just think about the things that water actually can wash away. It washes away more things than you can even imagine. It washes away more things than any solvent does. And if I have a situation like this, a well that's tapped into this water source, a rat falls in there, that's fine. After a couple hours, you'll probably be able to drink out of there. That rat and everything else will be cleansed. It'll be washed away. And so this doesn't happen when we dig our own cisterns. It can be stagnant, it can be contaminated. The other thing is it might not hold water very well. It can be leaky. When we build a cistern, when they build cisterns, they would go down. Some of the cisterns, if you've seen some like really grand cisterns, they're like entire mansions that are under, I don't know if you've ever seen those big archways, and they're all underground, these big, huge, I mean, they look like mansions is what they are. And they would go down there, and they'd actually, with kind of brick and mortar, would have to seal this all the way around so that the water wouldn't percolate down through the ground, and they would lose it all. When the water falls in there, you want to be able to hold it. Well, the problem is that, you know, that back then, you know, it was hard to get something that was going to hold it all in there, and so it could spring leaks, and it wouldn't hold the water as well as it would. And since we don't have a continuous source, we can run out of water because it leaks out and it's gone. So these are problems with cisterns. If you look up cisterns, and I had the young men, I kind of gave them some of these topics, and this was one of the topics, and they were kind of trying to look up and see, what is a cistern exactly? And depending on where you went, you kind of got definitions. And one of the problems that Nikki had when he was looking up this, because I gave him this talk, was that he looked it up and it said a toilet. That's what a cistern was. Well, It is. It is. That's part of a definition. It's a container that holds water. If I put out a barrel that I'm going to try to collect rainwater, that would be called a cistern also. It's the same kind of function, but the word toilet almost actually works better. Because you don't think about, would you drink out of a toilet? Your dogs drink out of a toilet. Is that good enough? Would you do that? I wouldn't do that. And that's kind of what you're doing here when you build your own cisterns and drink out of it. So we have two options. We have a well connected to the freely flowing water, which is God's way. And we have doing it our way, building a cistern, digging a cistern and trying to get my alternative water source from something else. I want to get satisfaction some other way, and I'm going to go and find my way to be satisfied rather than using God's way. And after Joseph was in Egypt for a long time, a Pharaoh came up that didn't know Joseph, right? We've been studying this in our class on Wednesday night, and enslaved them. And eventually Moses came and was going to lead them out. And as the children of Israel came out of Egypt, they were warned to not forget the way of God. Don't go back to the way of the Egyptians. Don't do it your own way. Don't try to find satisfaction your own way. You need to do it God's way. And in Deuteronomy 6:10-12, we hear this warning. When the Lord God, your God, brings you into the land he swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give you a land with large flourishing cities you did not build, houses filled with all kinds of good things that you did not provide, wells that you did not dig, and vineyards and olive grounds you did not plant, then when you eat and are satisfied, be careful that you do not forget the Lord who brought you out of Egypt, out of the land of slavery. Don't forget that the Lord provides you these things. He provides you wells. And take of those. Don't go and try to make your own things. Don't forget that satisfaction comes through God and through God only. We eventually get to Jeremiah, and Jeremiah speaks about cisterns more than anybody in the entire Bible, and there's a good reason for that. It's because, like Joseph, he was thrown into one. It was sometimes in some versions it calls it a dungeon, but in some versions it calls it a cistern. And we read that in Jeremiah 38:6. It says, "So they took Jeremiah and put him into the cistern of Malchijah, the king's son, which was in the courtyard of the guard. They lowered Jeremiah by ropes into the cistern. It had no water in it." Amazing. No water in it. Who would have thought? "Only mud, and Jeremiah sank down into the mud." So we've had two mentions of cisterns so far, and both of them were worthless. Neither of them held water. And they were both used for evil. One to hold Joseph captive, one to hold Jeremiah captive. What an evil. We take the prophet of God and we throw him into a muddy cistern. And we know Jeremiah was saved from that. He prayed and God delivered him from the people, delivered him from this cistern as he was down there in the mud on his knees praying to God about this. This was Jeremiah's cistern chapel. See, I told you. The jokes get worse. Cistern chapel. Yeah, I'll explain that to you later. Okay, so we have Jeremiah here, and Jeremiah is released from this cistern. But if we go to Jeremiah chapter 2, verse 13, and I also want to read 17 through 18, we have really the crux of what I'm trying to talk about today, okay, where we have this phrase, broken cisterns. It says, "My people have committed two sins. They have forsaken me, the spring of living water, and have dug their own cisterns, broken cisterns, that cannot hold water. Have you not brought this on yourselves by forsaking the Lord your God when he led you in the way? Now why go to Egypt to drink water from the Shihor? And why go to Assyria to drink water from their river?" Two things that the people did wrong. They rejected this spring of living, freely given water, and they came here and they dug their own cisterns that couldn't even hold water. This is a ridiculous scene that Jeremiah paints for us. Think about this scene. Imagine this. Wouldn't you just wonder what in the world a person would be doing if right here is a perfectly refreshing spring bubbling forth of freely given water. You don't have to do anything for it. It's there for the taking. And you would watch that person walk over here and dig a hole in the ground that doesn't hold water, that doesn't satisfy. Isn't that ridiculous? Wouldn't you look at that person and go, what is that person doing? Look, go over here. Look, it's right there. It's ridiculous. It doesn't even make any sense. We would laugh at a person like that. Well, we're laughing at ourselves because that's what we do. That's what we do in our lives. We have a refreshing source, but we don't take it. We reject it and we try to find alternative ways. I want to be satisfied. What can I do? What will satisfy me? How ridiculous this is. Verse 18, when it says, go to the river of Assyria instead of taking of Jesus, it reminds me of the passage in 2 Kings chapter 18. 2 Kings 18, 28 through 35. If you remember, this is when the king of Assyria was trying to take over the people of Judah with Hezekiah as their king. And it says, then the commander stood and called out in Hebrew, hear the word of the king of Assyria. This is what the king says. Do not let Hezekiah deceive you. He cannot deliver you from my hand. Do not let Hezekiah persuade you to trust in the Lord when he says the Lord will surely deliver us. The city will not be given into the hand of the king of Assyria. Do not listen to Hezekiah. This is what the king of Assyria says. Make peace with me and come out to me. Then every one of you will eat from his own vine and fig tree and drink water from his own cistern until I come and take you to a land like your own, a land of grain and new wine, a land of bread and vineyards, a land of olive trees and honey. Choose life and not death. I like that. That's the same lie that the devil has used since the beginning of time. It's unfortunate the devil doesn't have to be creative with us. It's really unfortunate. The devil can use one lie and he knows it's going to work forever with us because we're human. This is exactly what the devil did in the Garden of Eden. That won't die. You're not going to die. You can be satisfied. Take of this. Take of this. You can be satisfied. Don't listen to what God said. Don't listen to what Hezekiah is saying. Have your own cisterns, your own water. Find your own ways of satisfying. You can satisfy yourself. It's the same lie over and over again. Choose life rather than death. Well, is that how the story ended? What happened to all those people? You remember what happened? Did Hezekiah and the Jews go out and fight them? They didn't even have to do anything, did they? 2 Kings 19, verse 35. It's one of my favorite verses because of the way it kind of reads kind of strange in one of these versions. It says that 185,000 people, the Lord went through the camp and slew them all those Assyrians and the king. 185,000 people. And it says in verse 35, and when they arose early in the morning, behold, they were all dead corpses. I like how that kind of word is kind of strange wording. When they arose, they were all dead. So, you ever wake up in the morning and take your pulse just to check, just to make sure? Am I still alive? Okay, this is what, it didn't end in life. This was a lie. It was a lie. There was no satisfaction there. They were all wiped out. The Lord wiped them out for trying to take people astray and have them find some other kind of a satisfaction. If you're trying to do it your own way, the result will always, no matter what you think at the time, will be unfulfillment, despair, and death. It will always be that way if we try to do our own things. Remember what Jeremiah's conclusion was. If we go to the 14th chapter in verse 3 of Jeremiah, it says, the nobles send their servants for water. They go to the cisterns, but they find no water. They return with their jars unfilled. Dismayed and despairing, they cover their heads. That's the result of when we try to dig our own cisterns and we go away from what God says. Brothers and sisters, you cannot find fulfillment outside of God. You can't find it. A lot of times we try. I know we try. All these different things that we try, but we cannot find fulfillment, we cannot find satisfaction, we cannot find contentment outside of Christ. And the devil will constantly, till the day you die, constantly try to convince you otherwise. He will try to find ways that will try to make you think that you are being satisfied. Rick Sparks talked about alcoholism. Can I find satisfaction in alcohol? People try it, don't they? And what do you say if you're not prone to that? When you look at someone like that, it's hard to understand, isn't it? It's like looking at the person that's digging this well when there's a freely flowing here. What are you doing? You can't find satisfaction in alcohol. It's just death, maybe an early death, and despair. That's what you're going to find. Gambling. We talked about that. Doug Twaddell talked about that. Same thing. You think the next time. And I just keep going back to that cistern over and over again. Why do I do that? I just keep going. You can't find satisfaction in that. Fornication. Adultery. These are cisterns. You can't find the satisfaction in that. You will never be fulfilled in those things. We need to turn away from those, and we need to go to God's well. If we go to 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 17 through 19, it's what I think of as the New Testament version of Jeremiah's passage. 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 17 through 19. These men are springs without water and mist driven by a storm. Blackest darkness is reserved for them, for they mouth empty, boastful words, and by appealing to the lustful desires of sinful human nature, they entice people who are just escaping from those who live in error. They promise them freedom, while they themselves are slaves of depravity. That's what it is. Promise of satisfaction, refreshing. You can be satisfied with things, but that's not what they know it's not that way. They are slaves of depravity. Slaves of depravity. And this is what we can find ourselves in. Mouthing empty words, promising a false freedom. This is what we do when we build our own pathetic, broken cisterns. And we turn from the living water that is freely given right next to us. More sin, more sin, more. I need more, I need more, I need more. I got to find this refreshing satisfaction. Where is it? And the more I take, the more salt water I drink in, the thirstier I become. I need more to satisfy. And I never get to that point. I never get there. Remember in VBS this summer? I don't know if you remember this or not. John Lee was talking about honoring your parents, and he was talking, and he asked the kids, he said, how come sometimes you disobey your parents? How come you do that? Remember that one girl, I don't even remember who it was a girl that said it. That's all I remember. Remember what she said? She raised her hand, he called on her, and she says, because it's exciting. I thought that was good. That, you know, what an honest thing. Isn't that what it is? It's exciting. You know, I'm doing something that I'm not supposed to do. And somehow we think that there's going to be some satisfaction in that. And eventually there will be no satisfaction whatsoever. There will be just torment. Forever. Eternal torment. We will not find any satisfaction. We will want it. We will beg for it. We'll say, just a drop of water to place on my tongue. That's all I want. And we won't even get that. Because we turned away from the water. In Jude, the book of Jude, verse 7, in the King James Version, I use the version that I like the best, sounds the best. There's a really interesting word, I think, in verse 7 of the book of Jude. And it's talking about Sodom and Gomorrah. And of course, we know what the satisfaction they were trying to achieve. They had a real problem with homosexuality in Sodom and Gomorrah. In verse 7, it says, even as Sodom and Gomorrah and the cities about them in like manner, giving themselves over to fornication and going after strange flesh. That's a good word to use there. Strange flesh are set forth for an example, suffering the vengeance of eternal fire. Strange flesh, not the normal flesh that God proclaimed that this is the way it was supposed to happen between a man and a woman. But strange flesh, women with women, men with men. It's different. It's something else. I've tried this, you know, and I just haven't had the satisfaction I need. I mean, maybe something different, just a little strange, just a little different might give me something, a new high, a better type of a satisfaction. And I think sometimes maybe people get upset. Maybe we pick on homosexuality, that we pick on that sin maybe more than any others. But it's one that it really kind of lends itself to this broken cisterns. It's just going to the next thing. I mean, I'm assuming most of you view homosexuality as kind of unnatural. Why would you kind of do that? But I'll tell you right now, okay? In the progression of sin, it's completely natural. It's completely the natural progression of sin. I've done this. Okay, I'm going to try this. Okay, now I'll move on. I'll do something else. Who knows what comes next? But in the Old Testament, you have fornication. The next thing's mentioned homosexuality. The next thing's mentioned bestiality. That's the progression in the Old Testament. He says, don't do this. Don't do this. Don't do this. And how many, I mean, this, I know it's not going to be politically correct, but, you know, we use the word homosexual, but I mean, this be reality. Is it truly, should we be using the word homosexual, or should we be using the word bisexual? Have they never had sex with the opposite sex? I mean, come on. How many people do you know, these, you know, governors and politicians, it seems like, the ones we really know about, they've been married for 30 years, have children, and all of a sudden, I'm homosexual. No, you're not. You're not. You've had children, okay? You're not. You're just going on to the next thing, trying to find the next type of a satisfaction that you're trying to have. We call it an alternative lifestyle. Right? And it is. It's an alternative water source. That's all it is. An alternative water source. I'm going to try to do something else and see if I can find satisfaction that way. And I could do whatever else I can come to my mind that I could try to do. It's an alternative lifestyle. Okay? But it doesn't bring satisfaction. 40% of them surveyed suffer from severe depression. 35% of them consider suicide. 18% of them attempt suicide. And it's not a matter of because they're being made fun of. In our society, do you think they're going to be made fun of anymore? No. It's a matter of not finding the satisfaction. It's depressing. I'm still trying things and I cannot find the satisfaction that I need. It's an alternative water source. It's constructing our own cistern, our own cesspool is what we're constructing. And we're not finding the fulfillment that we want. And this has nothing to do with homosexuality. It's fornication, adultery, it's the same thing. Let's just go and try to find something else, a new person. My wife for 17 years? I mean, come on. Is that possible? Just being with one person your whole life? How can you do that? Come on, there's probably something better. It's very satisfying being just with one person your whole life. I have found great fulfillment in that. I have not had problems with that. But there's people that want to just try something new, keep moving on. Blaise Pascal, who is a famous physicist, which is why I'm quoting him, said, human beings are peculiar in that they pursue ends they know will bring them no satisfaction, gorge themselves with food that cannot nourish, and with pleasures that cannot please. C.S. Lewis often talked about humanity's incommunicable and unappeasable desires. Let us stop building and digging our own broken cisterns. They cannot satisfy. We need to tap into this living water, the Spirit that freely flows. I like to think of baptism here. We're going to offer the invitation. I like to think of baptism as when you get your faucet. You get your faucet. And when you're baptized, boy, your faucet's fully open, isn't it? It's flowing. The water bubbles out of you. You can't contain it, as Norley was talking about earlier. Wanted to tell everybody, right? Now, what do we do every time when we get older and sometimes in our life, we kind of turn that faucet to the left, don't we? We kind of shut it off sometimes. This is what I think it means when it says don't quench the Spirit or don't grieve the Spirit. That's what we do. The Spirit's always there. It's always there. It's always flowing. But sometimes we don't let it flow through us. We turn our faucet off. Let's keep that faucet open. Let's keep the water flowing. Let's be someone in your workplace that if I come there, they say, you know what? I don't know what it is about him, but I just like to be around him. He's refreshing. He makes me feel, we feel good. I feel good when I'm around this person. That's what we need to be in our lives when we go out here into the world. John 7:37-38 says, on the last and greatest day of the feast, Jesus stood and said in a loud voice, if anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. Whoever believes in me, as the scripture has said, streams of living water will flow from within him. Let's keep our faucet open and allow that water to flow. You remember in John chapter 4 in Jacob's well, remember what Jesus said to the woman? He said, go get your husband. And what did she say? I don't have a husband. And Jesus says, you said the right thing. In fact, you've had 5 husbands, and the one you have right now, the man you're with right now, is not your husband. Slave of depravity, that's what she was. She was trying to find satisfaction in another way. And Jesus was saying, you need to stop that. You need to take this water that I'm offering for you. In Psalm 63:1, we hear of King David's earnest plea, and hopefully our plea also. O God, you are my God. Earnestly I seek you. My soul thirsts for you. My body longs for you in a dry and weary land where there is no water. And we find God's answer in Isaiah 58:11. The Lord will guide you always. He will satisfy your needs in a sun-scorched land and will strengthen your frame. You will be like a well-watered garden, like a spring whose waters never fail. This morning, we offer the gospel invitation. We offer you. We don't offer you. God, Christ, offers you this freely flowing water. We need to tap into that. We need to stop looking for our own ways to satisfy ourselves in this world, because they will not be satisfying. It'll be end in death and despair. And we need to accept the true living water. If you have that need, we ask that you come forward as we stand and sing the invitation song.